Welcome to Community in Code, the podcast where we talk to the human beings behind the commits. I am here today with Mike Demo, who is a technical account manager at hosting.com. Although we actually met up last week in WordCamp Canada, and I'm going to let you explain what it is that you actually do, because I don't know that the words that are in your title necessarily represent accurately the things that you do.
Yeah, so my title's actually been updated since I filled out your form.
Off of LinkedIn, so you need to update that, buddy.
I updated LinkedIn. At least I thought I did. Anyway, whatever. So,
partnerships lead. Okay, you updated your title. You didn't update your headline.
So I did not update my headline. I do need to do that.
Yes.
Partnerships lead North America / technical account manager. Bottom line is, I help agencies and their developers be more efficient in what they do. So that could mean helping them get set up on the right type of server, or helping them optimize their RFP process so they can sell more, / basically just connecting people and trying to help humans meet other humans in a very non-sales way. So that's basically what I do. Is my title at InMotion Hosting when I worked there was lead handshaker, and that's basically still my role today.
That sounds appropriate. What you're not saying is that we see each other basically at every WordPress event that I go to, and I'm sure there are many that I don't go to. So also, like, I understand that there's a fair amount of travel, which makes it feel to me, as someone who is in DevRel, that you kind of do a lot of, like, the DevRel-y stuff. Maybe not the developer advocacy stuff, but definitely, like, the going places and talking to people and trying to figure out solutions and best practices for what works for the people that you're talking to at things like this. Is that not accurate?
No, I would say that's very accurate. Definitely not like pushing like a set of APIs or anything like that, but talking to developers that work at agencies, specifically larger agencies, about their pain points. What do they like with their existing provider? What don't they like? What do they wish they could do from a platform perspective? And then, you know, helping them, if it makes sense, utilizing some of our services, or if not, you know, making recommendations for different things that might help, you know, fulfill their needs. And a lot of the time it's just edge case stuff where, hey, I have this client who needs this certification I've never heard of. Do you have this? And I'm like, yes, we do. Here's the documentation. Yeah. Okay, great. So it really just depends. But bottom line, just trying to add value wherever it makes sense. Sometimes that involves our products. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes that means recommending other providers. It just depends on what's best for the people I'm talking to. And at the end of the day, that's what people remember, is you being helpful, not
right,
you know, product A or product B.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have the extra bonus benefit of, knowing you from the very beginnings of your WordPress origin story, because, folks who don't know either of us or both of us might not know is that Mike's first WordCamp was my WordCamp Salt Lake City, that I was either organizing or co-organizing. I can't remember what I was doing then. I'm looking at your thing. If it's 2017 was your if that's the year, I was probably lead organizing that one. I don't remember. It was a long, long time ago. tell the story of your how that became your entry point into WordPress.
Yeah, so I've been in open source a very long time. I steal a quote from Jessica Dunbar, who was the evangelist for Concrete 5 CMS. I'm not married to a CMS. I'm in an open source relationship, and I started in Joomla. From a community standpoint, I started in Joomla. So I was in the Joomla community a very long time, and I was doing senior dev stuff at agencies, mostly Joomla sites, for banks and credit unions, and then private equity portfolios and things like that. And I ran into Todd at a hosting conference. It was HostingCon in New Orleans. And I was speaking there on behalf of Joomla because I was the finance team lead at the time, which basically means selling sponsorships to, you know, companies that want to sponsor, which basically means selling to hosting companies to sponsor the project, just like all the open source projects still do. And I ran into Todd, and I met Todd before at the Joomla World Conference. He's the co-founder of InMotion, and they were promoting BoldGrid, which was their big new push into WordPress at the time. We started talking. They were looking for an evangelist. He said, it's not Joomla. I said, that's fine. And I basically was offered a job, but he wanted to make sure I wouldn't burst into flames if I walked into a WordCamp. So he sent me to Salt Lake City to as an interview. And yeah, that was my first WordCamp. And the funny part about that is the agency I was at, it was a downtown agency in Minneapolis. They were a WordPress agency, and I just finished a year-long project converting them all to Joomla. And I left to go work at InMotion as a WordPress evangelist. So that's kind of how I started in WordPress, and the rest is kind of...
I don't know that we've ever talked about this, but that just makes me wonder... Why Salt Lake City? Like, why was my WordCamp the WordCamp that you got sent to? Is there any particular reason?
I don't think so. I think InMotion, they were a global sponsor, or at least a North American global sponsor.
Yeah, I think I remember their logo.
And I think it was just the closest, whatever the next one was.
Yeah.
They had people going to. I don't think there was any specific reason. It was my first time in Salt Lake City, so that was cool. I got to see the Tabernacle Choir, so that was exciting.
Did you get to do anything fun in Salt Lake City, though?
That first trip, not so much, because I came in so late at night. And I was also nervous because it was a job interview.
Right.
Know what to expect. So I didn't really do a lot of that trip. I did the Tabernacle Choir and Temple Square, and that was about it. From an architecture standpoint, it was super pretty. But future trips, I've been to Salt Lake many, many times since then, and I've, you know, done lots of other things like Park City and all that.
Yeah. I always, like I said, we just came back from WordCamp Canada, and I always have this problem with going out to events because, like, unless you're going to tack on a day or two or something, basically, like, you're not going to a place, you're going to a conference center and a hotel, you know? Like, I didn't see Ottawa. I saw the inside of my hotel. I saw about one block's worth of downtown. I saw a small corner of Carleton University. And, like, I saw... a pool place. Dooley's is, I think, a Canadian thing, but I didn't have the context for that. And then, like, a bar. Like, that's what I saw.
And a very eclectic vegan fast food restaurant.
And a very eclectic vegan fast food restaurant. Yes, correct.
Yes. Yeah, so people are like, oh, man, you're so lucky. I travel way less than I used to. Mm. But at the height of my travel was 157 days a year.
Oof.
And so that had good and bad parts of it, but I would always say, yep, conference rooms around the world, you know. So what I always try to do, although I've been doing this less the older I get, is I try to get the latest flight out on the last day and try to have like a half day to do something in the city. And I still always try to do something, but it doesn't always work out. And I also find myself going back to the hotel and sleeping when I plan to, like, but I had these grand visions in my head to do this or that. But I was in London a few weeks ago with some coworkers, and we went to the Jurassic World Expedition exhibit. So we did that for a couple of hours. So little things like that, but definitely it's not a vacation, but there are parts with it.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like I feel that way too. Like, yeah, when I went to Atlanta for DrupalCon, like I would like to be able to say that, at least for some of these places, I would like to be able to say that I've been there and done things. And for some WordCamps, particularly when I was at HumanMade, when we went as like sort of a big group, we would do stuff together as a group that often meant like, you know, things outside of the conference. So I think that in Nashville, one of the engineers, principal engineer at HumanMade now, Kadam, had a contact at like one of the record pressing plants, and so they gave us a tour of the record pressing plant. That was pretty cool. I think I had a couple extra days, so like went to the museums and went to the Johnny Cash Museum. Went to like a museum of modern art or something, and that was cool. St. Louis, got to go to City Museum. Not that was where the after party was, but I didn't go to the after party. But I then heard about so many good things about the after party at City Museum that like I had brought my family out there with me. So like we all went then on a separate day, and then I think we went again because it was so cool.
In Nashville, did you get a chance to go to tour Hatch Show Print, the print shop in the Country Music Hall of Fame?
I did not.
So, do you, this might be a deep cut, but do you remember the giveaway, the little poster we had at Bold Grid?
I don't think that I do.
Anyway, long story short, they're the oldest printing company in Tennessee is called Hatch Show Print, and they do woodblock carved printing,
Oh,
and they still
cool.
do it to this day. Now it's part of the Country Music Hall of Fame, which is a nonprofit, and we hired them to do our giveaway posters for WordCamp that year. And it was funny because everyone that wasn't local was like, "That's a cool design, but I don't get it." But then all the locals were like, "Is that Hatch?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Because it's like people that are into it.
Oh, I remember that now, and I totally remember not getting it at the time.
So anyway, they also do a tour, and you can make your own little poster, and you learn about how they carve out the wood and stuff. So that's super interesting. Yeah, there's good memories everywhere. I do have a question for you. So
Sure.
I don't like traveling with my family at work things because I feel like one or two things happens. Either I ignore my family or I feel like I'm ignoring my job. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yes. My flutter, yes. It's rough. And that's a conversation that that we have ongoing with my partner. Like there's a bunch, there's various different layers, right? One of the levels is like the places that events aren't always or necessarily places that we, either her and I or we as a family, would want to go. So there's that thing. So like if it's not a place that's interesting, I mean, we had a lot of flexibility, you know, more years ago when, because we were homeschooling our kids, so we could pretty much pick up and go wherever. Now, my daughter's in high school. My son's not in school, but like my daughter's in high school, and so like we have to, that would also be a conflicting factor. But so like first of all, it's the place, and is the place interesting? And then secondly, yes, there's always the problem. Like obviously, like now, and particularly since I've put on the developer advocate hat, where going to the event is much more a distinct sort of responsibility of my job, then I feel more compelled to be present at all of the other things, like the after parties and the hangouts and whatever, because I'm on the clock. I'm here. I might just be hanging out, but I'm wearing my swag. I've got my Pantheon stuff on. I'm having conversations. I'm looking for people probably to have a particular conversation with, even if it's just to like make a connection, but just, you know, to be able to bring back to work, or you know, just to have that sort of like good Pantheon vibe at the event. And that's something that when I did go to things with my family, I was doing much less of because we'd want to do stuff, you know, like it's, you know, the conference is what, 5, 6, 7 hours or something. And so like the rest of the time it's like, okay, we should do something together. There's like then you can do the sort of thing where like you kind of offset it, like, you know, well, there's a couple days of the conference, but then, you know, the weekend after or a couple days before or whatever, you can do stuff. And I've done that too, but this is that's sort of a like a it's an ongoing conversation. And like there are places that I'd like to go. Like I would have loved to like have hung out in Ottawa for a couple days and like done stuff with my partner, like, 'cause I wouldn't want to do it alone. But also like in the future, like, will I go back to Ottawa? I don't know. Maybe, but it's probably not high on the bucket list. Like there's other places. So then it's like, you know, yeah, then it's just like going to a traveling t on an airplane to go to a hotel. But yeah, Nashville and St. Louis brought the fam. I have gone to, I don't think I brought anyone to Portland for a WordCamp, but we have been to Portland. We all went to San Diego for WordCamp US when it was in San Diego, because that was A, cheaper for us. And also like San Diego is awesome. And that's sort of the other thing too, is like how much stuff is there where, yes, I'm going to be gone doing work things. So, how many things are there available for everyone else to go and have a good time?
Yeah. WordCamp US San Diego. I loved it that year. It gets knocked down a lot because it was small. It was small. Like tickets sold out within seconds or whatever it was.
Yeah, it
You
was
know.
like, yeah.
It was hundreds of people, not thousands. You know, it was but the venue was at that really cool, like mid-century modern hotel, which definitely wasn't, it had its flaws as far as modern hotel amenities, but being somebody who likes tiki culture, that is the same hotel that they hold the annual Tiki Oasis convention in. So I was in love with, I was super happy with
I
it.
did not know that was a thing.
So I, which is why I stayed there and didn't try to stay at a Marriott like I always try to do, simply because I wanted to be at that hotel. And I don't know, it was one of my best work camps. I feel from a work perspective, the people that came were super, were like there to have conversations. It was a lot less people that might have found it or decided to come. Like, you know, the side effect of it is I feel like there was a lot less users, but there was a lot more BD conversations happening that year. And I think it was just a side effect of the people that knew to watch the drop with the people that are doing it all the time. So but I liked that year. I thought it was a really good year. And the venue was really nice. So.
No, I have good memories of that event, but part of that is just because it was in San Diego, and San Diego is awesome. I find excuses to go to San Diego at, like on any day. And I mean, honestly, like WordCamp Long Beach, I spoke at, this would have been 2017, maybe, I think, maybe 2019, somewhere in there, in the pre-COVID days. But like really the only reason why I was even like the only reason why it was on my radar is because it was in Long Beach, and like it could we could like justify like just going to California and going to the beach.
So that WordCamp in that year was the camp I turned vegan. I literally at camp decided to be vegan, cold turkey, while in
Cold turkey.
well,
Cold
cold tofu, cold turkey.
turkey. Ooh, that's even worse. But you went full stop. You just like I'm vegan today.
I did because I was I have a lot of allergies, huge long allergy list. So I was basically only eating dairy and eggs and poultry because I was allergic to everything else. Turns out after, but I was still getting sick all the time. So I Googled morning sickness and I ended up on PETA's website. Of course, they're talking different thing. They were talking about when you're pregnant. But I was like, well, I'm in California, good place as any to try. And and yeah, I was friends with I don't know, Tommy Tallarico. He's the person who created Video Games Live, the orchestra touring thing.
Yeah.
He was vegan, and so he gave me some tips, and yeah, the rest is history. I've since done other testing with my doctor, and I also have allergies to dairy and other, as well. So basically, most everything animal related, I'm actually allergic to, and I have tests to prove that. They're different things. Like I have the tick bite allergy for the red meat, and then but yeah, so I stopped getting sick all the time. But that was the work camp where I tried to go vegan, and it stuck. So
yeah, that's I mean, speaking of travel and going to events, like that's often how I rank the places that the events are, is how easy it is to find vegan food. And I feel like you probably travel a lot more than me. What I guess an interesting thing to think about are what places have you been where there was a surprising lack of availability of vegan food? Maybe surprising is not the correct word, but it might be. And what places were surprising in the availability of vegan food for you?
First off, shout out to the Happy Cow app. If anyone
for sure. Find, yep.
If anyone needs to find vegan or vegan friendly options, like not even full vegan restaurants, like let's say you have, you know, a friend or something visiting wherever you are, it's amazing. It saves so much time. But anyway, so as far as a place I was really surprised that had a lot of options, I would say when I was in Bangalore, India. I was surprised at all the vegan options there, which again shouldn't be surprising.
Right.
Thinking about it now, but like at the time I wasn't thinking about that. Same with like Thailand and like Israel and things. So like Tel Aviv had tons of options and I didn't even think about that. But then looking back, I'm like, well, you know, it kind of makes sense because a lot of these places, vegan checks a lot of the boxes, right?
Yes.
So it can be halal, it can be kosher. There's certifications and different levels of that depending on, you know, what you follow, but it was way easier in, you know, Asia and, the Middle East type area than I ever thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Where it's really hard is, like Eastern Europe, is really hard, as well as like coastal Europe, like, Barcelona and things, because a lot of menu things are marked vegetarian or vegan that have fish in them and things like that. So, and that I was really surprised about. So I was at a conference once, it was a Joomla conference, and I was in Barcelona, and there was nothing in the hotel where the conference was that I could eat, not a single item, besides just like a roll. Mm-hmm. So literally what I did is every day I ordered Domino's pizza, because they had vegan cheese. Because by the way, how do these American companies in every other country have vegan options on the regular menu, but we don't get that in the States? I don't understand that.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, so I would literally just order a Domino's pizza every single day of this week-long conference. People made fun of me because I was doing that, but there was literally nothing else around. And where the hotel was, there was nothing walkable. Mm-hmm. So, I find that's why I try to stick with Marriott's a lot. People make fun of me. They're like, you only want American chains when you travel to Europe and Asia. And I'm like, yeah, two reasons. One, points. Mm-hmm. And two, I know there's going to be options at a full service Marriott or Sheraton or Westin.
Right.
I understand it's not the most exciting menu at the restaurants, but at least, you know, there's something. So
yeah.
What about you? What have you been surprised on?
I think sort of the origin story of this question or thinking about this was when I went to WordCamp Denver, because I didn't necessarily expect that Denver would be a really good place for vegan food, but it had lots of stuff. And again, it's not super surprising, but you know, because it's a hip, cool, free weed sort of place. Like, you know, there's a lot of hippies. And the hippie and vegan overlap is pretty, the Venn diagram is pretty strong. Also, like I went to Sri Lanka, and that wasn't hard at all. I did a retreat there. Hardest was definitely, and surprisingly hardest, Italy was hard. I did a human-made retreat there, I think my first human-made retreat, and it was the same sort of like European thing where like they don't really get the criteria and trying to explain it and like all the things, and also there's often a language difference and like things. It's like it was rough. Japan wasn't super easy. Like we went to Japan as a family last year. We had like an Airbnb, so we ended up like cooking a lot of stuff, but like going out was like we had to be very careful. Like, happy cow again. But also there's like I think there was some Google Maps thing that somebody made of like all the vegan places in like all of Japan, and that was very helpful that other people had done that homework.
Hong Kong was similarly hard for me when I was in Hong Kong. Although thankfully I was staying at the Disneyland Resort. So it was Disney's always been very good in all their parks, so there's options there. But I think it was funny, like I was in Adventureland and they had a squid on a stick. And not because it was in Adventureland, just because that was, you were in Hong Kong. So that was interesting. So that wasn't too hard, but only at the sit-down restaurants. It was almost impossible to do the counter service or fast food in
Right.
Hong Kong.
Right. And that's, I feel like too, like it was a little bit, for me anyway, it was a little bit of a bummer, because you hear and you read so much stuff about like street food in these places, and like going down through an area where there is street food everywhere and being like, can't eat that, can't eat that, can't eat that, can't eat that. Like when you finally land on something where you can eat, it's like, oh my God. You know?
100%. Yeah. And it's good to have people that like are local too. Like I had a when I was at Koh Tao and I was in Thailand, he's like, oh, just he's like, just when you get to any restaurant, say you want to prepare jjay, which is a type of preparation for one of the common religions there.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly which one, but he's like, it's super common. If you say that, you'll be fine because he's like, that excludes all of these things, which basically makes it vegan for you. And I was at a lot of places that I nothing on the menu, then I'd be like, Jay, and they'd be like, oh, okay. And then they would bring me a different menu and it was fine.
Interesting, interesting.
So
Yeah.
even if I didn't speak the language, he told me how to pronounce the thing to say, and it was like a secret password to vegan in Thailand. Which funny story on that is we took a lot of our developers who are local to Trader Vic's tiki restaurant. And a lot of the devs weren't, they don't drink alcohol. So I was like, I told my boss, oh yeah, it'll be fine. It won't be that bad. Little did I know that they had the entire menu with a zero proof version. So it was the most expensive tiki night I've ever seen because nobody had alcohol. But they were being charged tiki prices, so that was fun. But everyone had a good time, which is what's important.
So a question I ask a lot of the guests that come on this show is what brought you, what got you into interested in tech, whatever that tech may be. And I think for you, I'm interested in, well, we can talk about it later, but I'm also interested in like how you got to Joomla to begin with, and what sorts of things, like the sort of differences between WordPress and Joomla that you've seen. But start with like how did you, what is your sort of origin story for getting into technology broadly?
Yeah, so my dad used to work for Data General, which then got bought by GE, and we had the first Apple II home computer in the state of Minnesota,
Oh, okay.
in the early in the 80s or 90s or whatever it was. So I've always been really big in the tech, and my dad was like the president of the local rocketry club, and he was an engineer for NASA before working for Data General for the Viking satellite project. And so I get it. I've always been introduced to it a lot from my dad. So I was always trying to make websites and things like that. So like in middle school, I wrote my papers in HTML. And then when I was a freshman in high school, I took HTML1 and I finished the entire course in 3 days. Mm-hmm. It was my first ever elective in high school. And then my teacher sent me to a college course. I got the school to pay for it. And then he had me help him write HTML2, the next HTML 201, which they never even had yet. So I basically was a TA the rest of the course, because I literally completed the entire class in 3 days. Mm-hmm. And so I've had a lot of great teachers. And then I got into DECA, which is a business club group, which I have a funny story about that, which I'll tell you in a second. But they had website development and something called the 7-Up Challenge. And so I would enter that, and I won. My senior year of high school, I won at the International Career Development Conference first place for the 7-Up Challenge banner ad design and website campaign design. I built that in Flash. Mm-hmm. So that was super, super fancy. Mm-hmm. And then the DECA still exists in college. It was called Collegiate DECA. I ended up winning first place for website development there. I built that in PHP Nuke, I think. Mm-hmm. Funny story, Jesse from Automatic, he was also competing that same year, and I beat him. Just saying. I mean, you can argue that he ended up way more successful than I did, but I beat him that year. So, and we didn't figure this out till like 2 years ago, when he's like, I've only been to Disneyland once. It was, have you heard of something called DECA? I'm like, 2005 International Career Development Conference, Collegiate. He's like, yeah. Like, and then he's like, I've never, anyway, long story short. So, and then from there, I was an intern. I went to college for website development, but I knew a lot of the stuff already and just super into it. How I found Joomla was SiteGround was my first host. So, if you don't count like AngelFire and some of those other shared services, right? So I was like a customer of SiteGround back when they only had one product, you know, it was just hosting. And they had cPanel with Fantastico for the auto installer, because software didn't exist. And I was just installing CMSs, playing around with it. And then I found on Mambo and fell in love. And then I noticed Mambo wasn't getting a lot of development after a while. And then I started clicking around again and found Joomla. I'm like, this is a lot like Mambo. I didn't know it was a fork at the time. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't in the community, and then I just kept building websites for small businesses, and then started freelancing and just kept doing that. And I self-taught myself all of Joomla, and then PHP and stuff, and then started using it in my job. And then that's how I ended up in the agency life. And then the more I got into Joomla, the more I went to the conferences, then met people who helped me volunteer. Because I still think the biggest, hardest part of all these projects is contributing. Mm-hmm. We all say it's easy to contribute. Like, oh, you need to contribute. You need to contribute. Go to Contributor Day. It's really, really hard for somebody brand new to a community to contribute. Like for me, for Joomla, I sent email and email and email, filled out forms, and no one would get back to me. It wasn't until I went to a Joomla conference and said the team leader and said, I want to join your team, that anything happened. And it's not a knock. It's just everyone's volunteering. So it's just the onboarding process of any of this, even at WordCamps, it's not easy for someone just to show up and be and contribute because it's still clicky.
Yeah.
Like you have to really push hard. And I feel like that's a huge opportunity that nobody's cracked the nut on yet. I feel like there needs to be an onboarding path for people that want to volunteer. Like, oh, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? Oh, let me introduce you to so-and-so and whatever. You know, just throwing a big doc and saying, here's how to prep for contributor day, pick your team, good luck. It's intimidating. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's how I got into tech. That's a very long answer.
I on the contributing topic, I went to DrupalCon for the first time this last year. I stayed for contributor day. Contributor day at DrupalCon is the last day. At WordCamps, it's often the first day, although it's kind of been either way. DrupalCon sort of starts off, contributor day starts off like you kind of figure out where, what, if you're a developer, you go with the developers. If you're marketing, you go with like marketers. And if you're, you know, other things, I don't know where you go. But they kind of divide people up a little bit. And then at least for the developer track, you, for first time contributors, you are paired with a mentor. So every new contributor has somebody, one person who has at least gone through it and probably has gone through it a couple times, sitting with you and like, this is, we're going to look for an easy ticket for you to work on. We're going to like read up on what's needed. We're going to find the line of code or whatever. And then you make your first merge request and, walks you through the whole sort of process. And the mentor is also, there's like mentor leads and all the tables or whatever. So like, you know, like when they have questions, they go, so like there's a whole process. And I think that like that level of one-on-one, interaction, like mentorship is really, really valuable. It's also something that gets tracked on Drupal.org. So like, you, like my Drupal.org profile now says who my mentor was at DrupalCon Atlanta, and his Drupal.org profile will show that he was a mentor, and maybe the event, I don't know. And then yeah, like you do your thing, and then like a lot of the stuff that I feel like in WordPress is standardized now, but like maybe at one point in time was more like ad hoc or like at the like for props and things, like all that stuff is sort of like built into like how they've integrated with like GitLab and things like that. Like it's actually a pretty good, like it feels far less like, I don't know, chaotic and you're kind of left to your own devices than contributor days that I've been to at WordCamps.
Yeah, so I think that's great because I agree. Like when I was at the Drupal World Conference and I met Tessa Miro, who was in charge, her and her partner at the time were in charge of the Drupal Extension Directory, because I thought that's what I wanted to do because I liked, you know, learned very quickly that was not the place for me. I was much better at the asking for money part than looking at code quality and standards and for plugin submissions, sorry, extension submissions. But she sat down and showed me the whole process and it was way less intimidating. That mentor idea is great. I know that they started a kind of like a WordCamp mentorship thing at WordCamp US, WordCamp B. So there's definitely a lot of good ideas that's going around. At like Joomla does this thing called Pizza Bugs and Fun. And that is like basically bug squashing and, you can do it remotely or in person and then you get some cash to, you know, buy pizza or whatever. That's very easy to join because somebody who's new can just do the testing part or, you know, whatever. Right. It's very set process wise. I feel like there needs to be good on ramps for people who are interested. Cause I feel like it's still, the onus is still on the volunteer to really push. And I feel like that's too bad because I feel like a lot of people would give a couple hours a week if there was just an easier on-ramp. For lack of a better analogy, I feel like when you show up to a contributor day, it should feel like you're walking into a church for the first time where everyone is overly happy to see you. And going to do whatever they can to make sure you have a great experience. I don't, you know, I'm not to knock anything, but you know what I mean? Like there's like that culturally, you know, over welcoming culture. I think we can all kind of learn from each other and make best practices, but that Drupal process you're talking about sounds awesome. And, at the end of the day, I think a lot more, there's a lot of ways people can contribute. It's not just code. That's what I always try to tell people is you can contribute to projects in lots of ways. It's not just sitting there working on code, or documentation. There's lots of ways you can use your skills and whatever that may be.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, now getting back to the last part of the very long question that was actually three questions. Having come from Joomla, I'm interested in what parts of Joomla you really appreciated, well, Joomla, Mambo, whatever, and what sort of you see as kind of fundamental differences in like either the approach or things that like yeah that are just different between Drupal or Joomla and WordPress. I was on a panel recently at Badcamp where we had somebody who had experience with Joomla and me as the WordPress guy, and then there's a DrupalCon so obviously everyone else is understanding things from a Drupal context, and so it was interesting having the conversation about like how do each CMS kind of approach things differently, and I'm interested in sort of like your take from particularly from being so embedded in Joomla.
Yeah, so I used to be on the board of Joomla, well, technically of Open Source Matters, which is the legal entity, but anyway, we don't need to get into, you know, governance. I think from a code perspective, what Joomla has that's really interesting is they are not afraid to, you know, beyond modern code bases and modern frameworks. That's also could argue be the detriment to the project because, mm-hmm. you know, breaking BC has kind of become a meme in Joomla. Yep. Now it's gotten better, especially more recently. It's very easy to it's much less painful than it used to be, from what I understand. Obviously, I'm now using it more as a hobby as like a daily thing. But so I think that's super interesting. Like Joomla was the first ever open source CMS to mandate PHP 7. And hosts hated us. Mm-hmm. Like tons of hosts were mad. Hundreds of hosts were upset. But the project made that decision. And because of that, it pulled up the standard for everyone else. All the projects, especially in the PHP open source world, so, you know, affect each other in different ways, in ways that we might not even think about. So I really like that about it. What I like about Joomla is that the governance is, because I was there when it was reorganized. The governance is very public. You can see how the governance is set up and it's all laid out. And as far as how voting goes and things like that, similar to Drupal, where you can join and get, you know, vote and things like that. So I appreciated that. But on the flip side, on the reorg, Joomla became a very flat organization, and I've seen lots of stuff stall. So, you know, where other projects like Drupal and WordPress have, I would say, more clear direction because they have a lead, and that has significant benefits too. So, my whole philosophy is figuring out what makes sense for open source in general, because I think the battle is not with each other; it's with closed source systems that can hijack your data or can, you know, handcuff you and make it very expensive very quickly. And Shopify is a perfect example of that. Shopify is a great user experience. It's an amazing user experience for a store owner, and it's very easy to enter. But then when you have success, it gets very expensive very quickly. And that is where I feel like we need to focus on. And there's been initiatives like this, like there's All Things Open and other like open source conferences where people try to come together and share best practices and things. And there's been nonprofits, like in Germany, there was a nonprofit called the CMS Garden, which had, I think, 12 open source projects part of it. So there's been initiatives and things, but I feel like in every open source project, there's so much tribalism, and mm-hmm. I feel like it doesn't help anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, being number one in WordPress, that's amazing. WordPress is great. I love WordPress. But is that what's really important, or is getting more people onto the open web, regardless of what that means, more important?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mike, for coming. We're kind of at time at this point. But before we go, where can people find you on the internet?
Sure. So you can find me on my website, mikedemo.com, MP Mike on X. And that's where I'm most active. And I'm also, you can find me at hosting.com and different webinars and things over time, but pretty much all my links from mikedemo.com will get you to all of the socials and all of the things.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for coming on. It was a pleasure to have you on the show. For everyone else that is watching or listening to this, we will see you on the internet.
Thanks.